Okay, we left off yesterday with the Gemara discussing what will happen when you say Beit Kor Stama. Gemara wants to know, the Mishnah lays out the two cases, one where you say Beit Kor Afar, and then in addition to that you say Mida Bechevel. So Mida Bechevel makes it an exact measurement, meaning that there is no room for error in that case because of the additional Lashon of Mida Bechevel. On the other hand, the Mishnah offers the other perspective, which is if you say Beit Kor Afar, and then you add the words Hein Chaser, Hein Yeter, there is room for error. So Gemara wants to know, okay, that's with the additional language. What is the situation when we simply say Beit Kor Afar? So Gemara tried to be medayek for our Mishnah, and then the Gemara concluded, from our Mishnah, Lech L'Mashmimina. There's nothing that you conclude from our Mishnah because the deal would run either way, or it's there's no conclusion. It's inconclusive from our Mishnah. So now the Gemara tries, on the top of Kuf Dalet Amud Bet, about 2, 4, 6 lines down, Tashma. Beit Kor Afar ani mocher lecha, kiv Beit Kor Afar ani mocher lecha, hein chaser hein yeter ani mocher lecha. So now these are three. It sounds like he's making three statements. One is Beit Kor Afar, one's kiv Beit Kor Afar, and then his one is hein chaser hein yeter. So afilu pichet rova the sa'ah ohutir rova the sa'ah, even if he's off by, again, this is a rova kav the sa'ah, 7.5 kav for a kor. So by that much, Higio, it works. Almo. So from here we conclude, Stama nami kehein chaser hein yeter dami. So it says, we can conclude here, we have three statements in the Braisa. The statement says, if you use a lashon of Beit Kor Afar, or ki Beit Kor Afar, or hein chaser hein yeter, right, all of those work to allow you for that differential, that room for error of Rov HaKav, the Sa'ah. So it says, no, hatam prushe kamifarish. It's the Bryce is explaining the previous cases. What does that mean? Ezehu Beit Kor, Shehi ke Beit Kor. What is the Beit Kor that's like a Beit Kor? Go on to Amalei, Hein Chaser, Hein Yeter. So what is a Beit Kor that looks like a Beit Kor, but it's not exactly a Beit Kor? That's when you have Hein Chaser, Hein Yeter. I mean, the Bryce is explaining the circumstances at which, when you say Beit Kor Afar, you can end up with the ability to be off by a little, and that's when, again, you make a statement of hein chaser hein yeter. The Rishpam reads it as two statements in the Braisa at this point in time, that the possibility is that k'rei beit kor afar, then k'beit kor afar hein chaser hein yeter. So that would be the case. Now the Gemara asks, wait a minute, ma'at k'lav rashim ken ani mocher lecha, ani mocher lecha lamali. So why does the Braisa indicates and uses the term mochelecha, mochelecha, mochelecha each time? So the indications by using the term mochelecha is that each statement, an independent statement, has nothing to do with the succeeding statement. They're not connected. What do you mean perushik mafarish? It was perushik mafarish, you only said mochelecha once. In fact, then it says mochelecha three times. It's indicative that you're talking about three separate cases. Now, even though Tosfos says that the Gemara is uneven in applying these types of questions, so sometimes the Gemara worries about this, the fact that it's laid out as three different cases, and sometimes the Gemara will just watch over that and say, no, I have no problem, Prushe Kamefarish. So he says it's not, the Gemara is not consistent with its application of this question, but here the Gemara accepts the question. Alav Shmemina, Stami Nami, Kehein, Chaser Hein, Yeter Dami, Shmemina. So that would be the conclusion. If you read the Braisa as three separate cases, then when you say Beit Kor Afar, it works in order to get you that room for error of Beit Rova the Sa'ah, or 7.5, Ka'av, to a core. So now, the Gemara discusses now, ma'o makzir lo ma'ot. So now we had in the Mishnah lays out that the seller has the upper hand. When it comes to the exceeding the 7.5 kav per core, right, the seller has the upper hand, and that he has the choice. He has the choice to have land returned to him or cash returned to him. It's up to the seller. So the Gemara says, okay, yapot kocho shel mocher amrinan. All right, so you took care of the seller. You empowered the seller to make a decision where he gets money or land. The yapot kocho shel lokeach lo amrina. What mean that the lokeach, the buyer, gets no rights over here? I mean that you're only worried about the seller's rights, not about the buyer's rights. Here you're giving the seller the right to choose, but the buyer is up a creek. I mean, he has to do whatever the seller asks him to do. Is that really true? Vatanya, we have a price that says, Pichet shivat kaviv umechsa lakur, ohutir shivat kaviv umechsa lakur, higiyo. So that 7.5 kav per kor, if it's less than that, or up to that amount, higiyo. Yoter mikan, if it's more than that, kofin et amocher limkor vet lokeach likach. Over there, we force the seller to sell and the buyer to buy. So over there, it sounds like we are worried about for the buyer's interest as well. We don't let the seller make the choice. Right? We protect the buyer as well. The man says, originally, when the transaction went down, the price was higher. Right? And now it's cheaper. Over now, at this point in time, the land prices have come down. The buyer has the right to say to him, listen, if you're going to force me to buy this, which I didn't want, I wanted a kur. Now you gave me an excess of a kur, so you're forcing me to buy that excess land and pay for it. If that's the case, you have to give it to me at today's prices. I didn't accept to buy a larger tract of land more than a kur at the higher prices. If you want to force me to buy it, I'll buy it at today's prices. Right? So now, in that case, or in that situation, the buyer has some sort of pushback on the seller. The seller has the right to choose. You're right. He chooses whether because they basically we aim. This is kofin al midat stom. It's midat stom that for him it's comes to when he comes to cash versus land. For the buyer, there's a lot of value of having the land because it's appended to what he purchased. To the seller, that small tract of land is going to have no purpose. It's going to be very difficult to work, and it's going to have might really be problematic for him. So we say over here. Right, whether it's go ahead and do what the seller wants. So either give him cash or give him land. But now we run into a problem, which is land prices shifted. In the meantime, that's true when land prices are stable. Land prices are stable. He says to him, just take the other piece of land for the little extra. But now, all of a sudden, land prices went down. Land prices down. The buyer goes, listen, you know what? I was willing to buy a big core at that price. But you want to now tell me that at that price I got to buy even more? No. You're going to have to sell it to me now at today's prices. You make a choice. You're right. You can either sell the land to me and I'll take the land or you take the land and I'll keep the cash. Either way. But the deal's going to be done at today's prices, today's cheaper prices. So you're right. You still have the choice. But it's now we put the ball on the buyer's court, which says that he can decide that it's at today's prices. So Mar says, Vatanya, wait a minute, we have a price that says that he purchased it at the original price. The additional land is purchased at the original purchase price. So Mar says, that's in the opposite case. The opposite case where the original pricing was cheaper, and now it's higher pricing. So he says, listen, I went into the market to buy land because I saw the prices were cheap. Now you're going to force me to buy at the higher prices because you gave me too much land? It's like a great idea. I'll give him a little extra land, and now you have to pay me at the higher prices. No. He says, you want me to continue to buy. You want me to take that whole tract of land. I'll take it. But I'm going to take it at the price we agreed, at the original price. If it's not the original price, I'm sorry. You're going to have to take the land back, and that'll be it. So again, the rights of the buyer come up, which is now we do. We have rights of the seller and the rights of the buyer. The rights of the seller are that he's the ability to take cash, right, or take the land. That's his choice. But when we say that it's his choice, I mean, to take the land is obvious because it's his land. I mean, he overgave too much. It's his land, so that's of course he has that choice. Now, to force to take cash is the chiddush, and that's what the Mishnah says. To force the buyer to give him cash for more land than he expected, right, that we do give that right to the seller. But we only give that right in the context of giving the buyer the benefit, which is that he gets the lower of the prices. It's the lower of the purchase price or the current price. Whichever lower, he can buy it at either of those prices because we can't force him to buy it at a higher price. Whether it's the price went up or whether the original price was higher, can't demand him to purchase more land than he agreed to at the higher price. So he says, listen, I'm willing to do this. I'm willing to take care of you and give you cash, but I'm going to do it at today's prices. If it's lower, I'm going to do it at the original price if that was lower. So that's where the buyer's rights come in, and that's what the Gemara is describing, though it's not all in favor of the seller. It's also in favor of the buyer. Right now, Gemara goes, Shimshir b'sadeh beit tet kabim. So now, we had a principle that was laid out, which is that up to 7.5 kav per kur, at that rate, everybody agrees that you're mochel. From 7.5 kav to 9 kav, we have cheshbon, which is what the Mishnah lays out. It's the seller's choice, cash or land. Above tet kabin, which is already a significant field, everybody agrees that the mocher has to take the land back. Because he has a sadeh that he can work, a significant piece of land, he has to take the land back. That's it. Now listen, if they come to an agreement and both parties agree, that's fine. But the seller has to take the land if the buyer wants to give it back. So now, the Gemara wants to know, okay, and we mentioned this in the Mishnah, when it comes to less than that amount, it seems, right, at less than that amount, we run the same ratio, which is Rova Kav L'Sa'ah. Rova Kav L'Sa'ah is the ratio of how much error you can have in these types of lands. So you can run that error from Rova Kav Lasar, even lower, but the Mishnah mentions that, all the way up to a core, which would be 7.5 Kav to the core. That we know. What happens when you've exceeded a core? When you're up to like Kurayim. At a Kurayim level, do we say that there's a same relationship or same ratio, which is just like there's 7.5 Kav to the core, there will be, right, 15 kav to the Kurayim, right, to two kur, you would also get 15 kav of error. Or do we say once we've reached a level of significance, which is Tisha Kavin, then that's it. Above that level, no matter how big or how much land you purchase, that's considered the error. That's considered the threshold for error because that's a significant field. So this is a machlokas. So here, Amar Rav Huna, Tet Kavin Shamru, Afilu Bebik'a Gedola. Rav Huna says that Tet Kavin is a cap. There is no more error. Above Tet Kavim, there's no more error. The level of Mechila flattens out at Tet Kavim. Now it's all about the ratio. It's all about the relationship. It's the size of the land will determine how big an error is. The error is a fixed percentage of the land, which we discussed earlier, over 2% of the land. That's a fixed percentage of the land. So that error, right, you're entitled to that error as much as you buy. But it's always a relationship. It's a percentage of the total purchase that you're making. It doesn't matter how big. Now, Rav Huna, on the other hand, says, no, there's a cap. Once you hit Tet Kavim, which is a little over a core, you're going to hit Tet Kavim. Once you hit that level, it flattens out. And that's the only error that you're allowed, is up to Tet Kavim. Anything above Tet Kavim will no longer be that is an error, because Tet Kavim is already significant. So, and now there's one other line, an additional line that's placed into Rav Nachman, which is V'i. It says, V'i, ika milta yeterto. If you have a little extra, the Tisha Kabin, hadre, it goes back. So this, the Rashbam spends, you can see his large Rashbams over here, spending time with all the pshatim that he doesn't like for the explanation of this. And he comes down to a simple explanation. This is what he believes in Rav Huna. What happens here is that there's a interim status, which we talked about in the Mishnah, which is in the Mishnah, from 7.5 kav until 9 kav, we have what's called cheshbon. You have the ability to make a cheshbon on the number. So what the way the Rashbam explains this line in Rav Nachman is, listen, that ability to have the cheshbon is unique to a kor. It's unique to a certain level. Why? Because a kor has 7.5 kav is forgiveness, is mechila. 9 kav already is too big in that land. There's a ratio, there's a buffer zone or a little gray zone between 7.5 and 9, and that's the area where the Mishnah lays out cheshbon. But what happens if you go to Kurayim? Go to two core, according to, right, Rav Nachman. According to Rav Nachman, you save the same relationship, same ratio. So that means you'll get, the error rate will be 15 kav per Kurayim. But 15 kav is also greater than 9. So what does that mean? You're right. At 15 kav exactly, there will be mechila. Right above 15 kav, a mashu above 15 kav, what will you do now? A mashu above 15 kav, we don't say, oh, now from 15 to 18 has cheshbon. We don't double that gray area and say that's cheshbon, and then at 18 there is, right, then there's no cheshbon anymore. No. Once you've exceeded 9 kav, once you've exceeded 9 kav, that's it. It goes automatically to the chozer. So that's what the Rashbam says, the line of Rav Nachman says. Rav Nachman says, number one, the relationship of the ratio is notein shiva kabino mechsa the chol kur v'kur. For levels above 9 kav, there's only two categories. Mechila, which is below the percentage, and above that is hadre, it returns. There's only a small, only one time or one situation in which there's this cheshbon, and that's between 7.5 kav to 9 kav, which only applies between a kor and somewhere a little bit above a kor till you reach 9 kavin. So it's from up there, that will apply to that cheshbon. But anything above that level which reaches 9 kavin, there's no longer this middle category called cheshbon. Everything is either mechila, which you're above the percentage you're below, and if you're above the percentage, it's hadre. And that's what he writes here, ika milta yeter, the tisha kabin. Anything above tisha kabin, hadre, goes back. Not if it exceeds tisha kabin, but only if it exceeds the mechila rate, that is, you're entitled to, and it's above tisha kabin, then it automatically goes back. So that's the way the Rashbam explains this.
Wait, sorry. So give me a case.
Alright, so in a case of, if you were to take, for instance, two kur, and instead, in two kur, 15 kav is mechila. So you can have an error rate of up to 15 kav, that's 7.5 kav per kur. That's not a mekartos, that's the mechila rate. What happens if you have 16 kav now? 16 kav to a two kur, to two kur. In the old situation, or basically, if you just took our Mishnah, you would say, wait, okay, 7.5 kav to the kur is mechila. up to 9 kav for kor is that gray area we do cheshbon, the mechor gets to choose. Then above 9 kav per kor is return. So now, if we related that to kurayim, you would say, okay, up to 15 kav is mechila. From 15 to 18 kav, you do cheshbon. And above 18 kav, you do chazre, it goes back. So what the nice statement of Rambam says, I'm sorry, but from 15 to 18, it also goes back. There is no cheshbon situation here, in that the ratio applies to mechila, which is at 7.5 kav per kor. But the 9 kav, between 7.5 and 9 kav, those are fixed rates. And that rate, once you've hit 9 kav, there's always chadre and there's no cheshbon. So that's what he's suggesting.
Okay. So Rav Huna says...
Rav Huna says that there's only one threshold, and that's 7.5 kav. At to kor until you hit 9. 9 is the kav.
After 9,
it's always hadre. Right. There's always a kav, even if it's kurayim. If you do 15 kav.
That means it's a mekachtos.
Right. I don't know if you call it a mekachtos. Hadre. The mekachtos is a, as if you look at Tosos over here, the Rashi discusses in the Mishnah that our cases over here are not cases of mekachtaut over here. These are cases where hadre, the whole transaction doesn't go back, just the excess goes back. If it was a mekachtaut, you would undo the entire transaction. These are transactions where there's no mekach ta'ut. He intends to sell a kor. There's some excess land over here. He didn't mislead him, right? He told him, I'm going to sell you a kor, and he gave him more than a kor. So what you do is you return the extra piece above the kor. It's not like he lied to him or he told him something that was untrue. He didn't offer him something and not pay him what he, you know, or give him what he offered him.
So give me a case with a nafkamina between a kor and a nafkamina.
What's the case where you have 15, you have two kor and 15 kav. Mm-hmm. According to Rav Nachman, it'll be mechila. According to Rav Huna, that'll be chozer. You have to return the excess because you're above 9 kavin. So basically, for Rav Huna, it'll be a declining percentage of the total sale. As you go higher and higher, it'll be a declining percentage. You'll have an asymptotic line, which is that the 9 kav will come less and less and less, and as soon as you cross over 9 kav, you are automatically chozer. Alright? Mm-hmm. So, 8 vei Rav the Rav Nachman. So Rav challenged Rav Nachman from our Mishnah. Shim shir v'sadeh beit tisha kabin. Right, so if you leave over in a sadeh 9 kav, lav de zavin le kurayin, isn't the case in the Mishnah, even when he sold them kurayim, even when he sold them to kur, our Mishnah says, that if you have beit tisha kabin, that's it, it's over. There's nothing to talk about, there's chozer, there's no mechila, that's it. So if that's the case, that supports the position of Rav Huna, because here you have, when you're selling kurayim, the Mishnah still mentions tisha kabin as the threshold, above which, automatically, it's chozer. He says, lo. The case in our Mishnah is Zavin Leikur. You sold him a kur. If you sold him a kur, you're right. Until Tisha Kabin, you haven't reached a level of significance. So now the Gemara says, all right, well, the next part of the Mishnah says, Ubegina, Beit Chatzi Akav. In a Gina, it says that the threshold is Chatzi Kav. Half a Kav. Lav the Zavin Leik Sa'atayim. Isn't that the case even if you sold him two Sa'ah? In two Sa'ah, right, if we're talking about Rova Kav, per sa'ah. So over here, where he's selling him a sa'atayim, right, then his entitlement over here is the error, or the error rate, which is for egina, is chatzikav, then at sa'atayim you're already in excess of, you're only capped out at the chatzikav. Chatzikav is the rate, even though you're only at sa'atayim. So it's not the zavin like sa'ah. Now it's a case where he sold him a sa'ah. Even when he sells him a sa'ah, sorry, the error rate is the same percentage error rate, and you're capped out at the chatzi kav. You're capped out at the rate where you hit a gina, where it becomes significant. Gemara says, "Ukadivrei Rabbi Kiva," and Rabbi Kiva says, "Beit rovakav." By gina, you get rovakav. My love, the zavin lay sa'ah. Even though he sold him a sa'ah over here, see if he sounds like only up to rovakav would be fine. But above that rate, you would automatically be chuzer. So he says, no. Again, by Rabbi Akiva, we're talking about a case where he sold him a chatzi sa'ah. Right? So the zavin lay chatzi sa'ah. If he sells him a chatzi sa'ah, then the rovakav becomes significant because that is a gina. But again, if you moved up to over a sa'ah, then you'd have to use the same percentage relationship. And therefore, if you got up to, instead of a chatzi sa'ah, you got up to a sa'ah, according to Rabbi Akiva, you would be entitled to a chatzi kav of error in a gina. So the error rates, the Gemara is suggesting that the error rates in the Mishnah are capped out because the Mishnah doesn't tell you what size or tract of land that you are selling. Mishnah ignores that. So if that's the case, let us just say that it means any size. If it means any size, that supports the position of Rav Huna, that the size is irrelevant. Besides the element, you're capped out at a significant piece or tract of land, which is Tisha Kabin, Chatzia Kab according to, in a Gina, according to the Chachamim, and Rova Kab according to Rabbi Akiva. So long comes the Gemara says, no. No, the Mishnah started out. The Mishnah is referencing what it started out with, which was that the Mishnah says, Pichet Rova the Sa'ah, Ohutir Rova the Sa'ah, Ivio. So that's what we're referring back to. We're referring back to cases of Sa'ah. And that Sa'ah is the relationship that we're talking about. So when you're talking about Sa'ah, then we're talking about each of these relationships relative to a Sa'ah, or the relationship that we talked about, Rova Kav the Sa'ah. And that will persist even beyond, right, Tisha Kabin, or even beyond the caps. These aren't physical caps, these are caps which you double. Meaning if you have double size of land, you double the cap. So that's the position. The Gemara says, okay, we don't have anything. Now, Boy Ravashi, Sadev and Asid Gina, Gina and Asid Sadev Mai. What happens in a situation where the field was originally a field, and then it turns into a Gina? Or the other way around, it was a Gina, and now it turns into a field. So the relationship or the size of land that is considered significant changes. So for instance, in a Sadeh, he sells in a Sadeh, and in that Sadeh, he is what is entitled to a right Tisha Kabin. Now Tisha Kabin is a large tract of land, so he's below the Tisha Kabin. But then all of a sudden that the Tisha Kabin, it turns into a Gina, all of a sudden there's a new Mayan that comes through the field, or there's water in the field. So he's able to use the right, he's able to use this now tract for Gina. Now for Gina, this is a significant piece of land. Significant piece of land. Can you tell him, listen, you have to take the land back. I'm not giving you money anymore for it. Right? Or the other way around. If you start out in a Gina, and then it was a significant tract of land in the Gina, for instance, Rova Kav in a Gina significant, where it could force him to take the land back, and then the Mayan dries out. Or something happens to the land, and now it's planted as a Sadeh. Can he still tell him, take the land back? Because now it's not significant. In the context of Sadeh, it's not significant. So the Gemara says, my teku. In that case, we don't know. We don't have an answer. If the land has changed status between the time that the transaction went down and the time that we're trying to return the land, right, then we don't know what to do. We don't know if we go butter hashto. We don't know if we go after now. What's the status now? Or do we go after what the, at the time of the transaction, was it significant or not? So the Gemara says, we don't know. Tana, imaya samuch l'sadeo afil koshu machzir lo karka. So now, if the land is adjacent, the land that he's selling this individual is adjacent, the mocher has land that's adjacent to it, then it doesn't matter how much land, he can say to him, listen, you gotta take the land. Why? Because the whole problem here is that we don't want to give the mocher some sort of stranded land that's in the middle of nowhere that's not significant enough to work. So only if it has significance do we say you can take it, force him to take it, because he can say you can work it, you can take care of this land. But over here, if he has adjacent land, the mocher, then any piece of land is significant to him, because he could just append it to the land he owns already. If he appends it to the land he owns already, say, no problem, take the land, you're fine, you can have it, because we don't say it, no tircha yiseiro, you're plowing the field right next to it anyway. If you're going to do everything right next to it, then take these little pieces of land, and the buyer can always say to him, take the land back. He has a right. Then it's the buyer's right to always say, take the land back. So, by Ravashi. Ravashi asks the question, Bor, mahu shetafsik. By a bor, what's the din that should be mafsik between the fields? Meaning that if you have the mocher as an adjacent field, and now the sells the field, but between those two fields is a bor, is a cistern of some sort of water, right? So is that mafsik? And therefore, the land on the other side of the bor, he does not have to take. Or do we say the bor is in use for the land? And so therefore, both sides of the bor, the land on either side is still relevant, and he will still get a kosho. Now, the Rashbam, like he's been doing till, says it's imtim salomar. Imtim salomar that a bor is not a hefsek, then a matamayim mahu. Matamayim, which is more significant, right? It's a whole waterway that runs. Is that enough to be mafsik between the seller's land and what he sold to the mocher, to the buyer, to the okeach, and then he'll have to take the land back? Wow. And again, if Timsalomar that Amatamayim is not a hefsik, then the Mao should tafsik derech rabim mahu. What's the din should tafsik? What's the din of a derech rabim? 16 amot. Not a reshut rabim. Reshut rabim for sure is mafsik. But here is a derech rabim. What is 16 amot wide? What is that should be mafsik? And then again, im Timsalomar that derech rabim is not mafsik. What about rechva dedikla? Rechva dedikla, we said before, were significant trees because they were expensive. They're very valuable. So therefore, these grafted palm trees. Right, mahu shetafsik. What would be the rule there? Where they mafsik between pieces of land, and therefore, if he had a tract of land on one side and he sold on the other side, does he have to take back any amount that was in excess? Right. So the Gemara says a teku. In all these cases, it's a teku. So now the Gemara says below it the rova bilvad machzir lo. The Mishnah says that he doesn't just return him the rova elakol amotar, all the extra. It says kalfilaya. It's backwards. What do you mean it's not just the rova, but magzila kol amutar, all the extra? What do you mean all the extra returns him? Of course the extra is what he's returning him. That part which is an excess of the rova kav, of course that's what he's returning him, because he's an excess of mechila. The Mishnah should have been phrased the other way around. What's the bigger chiddush? You have now a threshold. Let's call it the threshold as Tisha Kabin. And it's exceeded the threshold of Tisha Kabin. So now we say you have to return. So now the least chiddush is you have to return what's in excess of the Tisha Kabin. You have to return until that point. The bigger chiddush is that you have to return even the Tisha Kabin themselves, or he has to give back the Tisha Kabin. That's the bigger chiddush, but that's not what the Mishnah writes. The Mishnah writes, below it's a rova bilvad machzir, ela kol amotar. Right, not just the rova itself, but the motar, that's just an excess of the rova. It's backwards. They're telling you the bigger chiddush and saying, oh, not only that, but the bigger chiddush. No. So when it says, Tani Rav Eben Rachman, he reworded it. Oh, et hamotar bilvad machzir lo, not just the excess, I mean not in excess of Tisha Kabin, el et kol harevayim kulo, but the basic amount, the threshold amount, which was the amount of mechila, he also has to return. And that'll make sense. If you amend the mission to read that way, then it makes sense that the greater chiddush is mentioned, not just the excess that was above the threshold, but even the amount that got up to the threshold will be returned in that case. Right, and we brought this Gemara earlier, right, the Gemara rejected it later, but the Gemara brought this earlier to prove whether it's the threshold, up to the threshold you return, or even beyond the threshold you return. So here the Gemara brought our Gemara over here, which says that even beyond the, once you've crossed the threshold, you have to return everything, not just above the threshold, but the whole threshold itself. The Gemara rejected it because of the unique circumstances here of the field and the size, which makes it significant, but the Gemara used exactly the way it's worded, like now, with the amended words, which are that the chiddush is that you return everything. So one Tosfos that I wanted to mention in the previous Amud, which is the last Tosfos. The last Tosfos says, I don't understand here, we had two statements. We have our Mishnah, which so far says to you that the error rate is rova kav per sa'a, up to 7.5 kavin, right, which would be the error rate for a kur. But in yesterday's daf, we had a statement, right, by Rav Yitzchak, which says, Trashim shamur beit abat kavin. Person's willing to accept a area in the land that is not plantable up to 4 kav. That's the cap. So now basically what you have is, if the person would give him 7.5 kav worth of sela in the field, the transaction would be, right, annulled. Say, I don't accept it. If you had a kur worth of afar, and within that kur afar, there's 7.5 kav worth of rock or sela, no good, the transaction. But, if the 7.5 kav were not there at all, it's a good transaction. So it's almost here, if you take their two statements, if the mistake is that we didn't give you the land, meaning that you gave him less land than you should have, you're fine. If you gave him the exact amount, but within that land there's sela, then it's no good. So why should the threshold be when you have sela be 4 kav? And the threshold when you make a mistake and don't give him the land at all, that kav is 7.5 kav is the threshold per kor. Doesn't seem to make sense. So Tosfos tries to, over here, ask the question, he tries to reconcile between them. Ishlamar. It's in the wide lines, 2, 4, 5 lines down the wide lines. Veish lamar, the Rebbe Yitzchak lo kamar leitzaref the pachot mirova the sa'ah. The Rebbe Yitzchak is only coming to describe, right, the tziruf in less than a rova the sa'ah. So what is it? He's explaining to you that that the error rate over there, the error rate is less than a rova kav to sa'ah. The slaim are less than rova kav to a sa'ah. So he's telling you, listen, if you, even in that rate, if they're mitzaref, he's trying to tell you that you can have a tziruf, even when you're at lower than the error rate should be, they can still be a mitzaref, that if you get up to a certain level, then 4 kavin is considered a concentration that is too big. So all he's telling you about is the concentration level, not telling you about the cap. He's not telling you that up to 4 kav, that's it. No, you can have even more than 4 kav. All he's telling you is the 4 kav is the concentration level where it becomes too big. That's his suggestion. Rashba offers an alternative interpretation. Rashba's solution is, listen, you're talking about two different issues, two different cases, totally. In a case where the buyer is standing there, he sees the field, then the error rate is up to rova kav l'sa'ah. After rova kav l'sa'ah, he's willing to accept. So they're up to 7.5 kavin, he's willing to accept, because he's standing there, he sees what he's getting. He knows what he's getting. All right, we can't be exact, so there's a little error rate. So that error rate he's willing to accept. On the other hand, in the other case, by Trashin, by Rabbi Yitzchak, he's talking about a case where the buyer doesn't see the land. The seller says, I'm offering you a big kur afar. So now he shows up, big kur afar, and there's no big kur afar there. I mean, if there's anything less than a big kur afar, the transaction doesn't go. Why? Because he didn't see it. He's not mochel. He says, you told me big kur afar. I assumed you're giving me a full big kur afar. Now I show up and there's no big kur afar. No way. Okay, that doesn't work. All right, by Sela, he's willing to accept up to a certain error rate. What's the error rate? Up to 4 kavin. That's still within the context. It's batel the gabi the land of Beit Kor Afar. Once you've exceeded 4 kavin, that's not batel anymore. But it's a different issue. It's not the issue here that he's willing to be mochel up to 9 kav or up to 7.5 kav, because he wouldn't be. He wouldn't be mochel even a kav, because he never saw the land. So the key difference, Tosafot says, between the cases is whether he saw the land or didn't see the land. One case where he saw the land, he knows what he's getting. Then there's mechila up to 7.5 kaf. Where he didn't see the land, there's no mechila whatsoever. If there's no mechila, then Rabbi Yitzchak is addressing that issue. When there's no mechila, he still says that up to 4 kaf is batel the gabi the land, assuming that concentration rates are right, you know, based on what they qualified after, whether it's 5 kabin or over half, rova asadeh, whatever the concentration rates are, that sela will be forgiven because the land is there, it's just not plantable. So that would be the difference, according to the Rashba, between Rabbi Yitzchak and our Gemara over here, or our Mishnah over here. Okay, we'll stop at this point in time.